Now, what about the MLA's pay? We'd all sort of perked up our ears to listen to the Secretary of State yesterday across at Westminster, and fell a bit flat, didn't it? So the Secretary of State says the time is right to address concern. This is surrounding the MLA's salaries and the absence of a functioning government at Stormont. And she's minded, great word, minded, to reduce their pay. But she also wants to hear from the parties before actually announcing any decision. Has she not already heard from the parties? And what listening is she going to do? Is she taking what would absolutely be described as a careful approach, or is she afraid to make a decision? Now, I want to speak to the Deputy Leader of the SDLP, Nicola Mallon. Nicola, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Nicola, you stand if the move is made, because there was an independent review by the former Chief Executive over at the Assembly, Trevor Rainey, and he was recommending a pay cut of almost £14,000 over two stages. So the likes of your salary would go down from about 40, what is it, what are you on at the minute, about 49,500. You go down to 42, roughly 42,000, and then eventually maybe down to 36,000. So something like that. Are you prepared to take that cut?
Well, the SDLP and myself in particular, we came out on this issue well in advance of this independent review, because it's only fair that you're paid for the job that you do, and that should apply no matter what your profession. It is very frustrating that, because the DUP and Sinn Féin just can't get their act together here, that all of us are being prevented from doing the job that we want to do, Frank, which is to legislate as well as our other functions. But we aren't, because of their political deadlock, able to legislate and perform that role. So it is right that we shouldn't be paid for it.
Okay, so does the Secretary of State really need to talk to the SDLP? She says she's going to talk to the parties. She's bound to know that that's where you stand on it. So why has she not just made the decision to cut the salaries?
Well, that's a matter for the Secretary of State, but I can assure you that the SDLP has made its views crystal clear on this issue to Trevor Rainey, but also to the Secretary of State on a number of occasions, like we have consistently throughout the talks on issues like the need for an independent chair, the need not to have an exclusive two-party process. So the Secretary of State should be in no doubt about our position on the pay issue, and so I'm bewildered as to why she's seeking another round of consultations. Certainly our view won't have changed, and we'll just resubmit our submission that we sent in several months ago.
Now, the DUP have her ear much more than you would have, because they've got this arrangement as far as the government's concerned across at Westminster. Do you feel that they're saying to her, listen, hold on, our boys and girls don't really want to lose out on 14 grand a year?
Well, Frank, that is the question, and it's very difficult to get the answer to that. I've called on the British government to publish minutes of the secret meetings that it's having with the DUP in this coordination committee meetings. To date, they haven't done that. They have just published two very short notes of two meetings with absolutely no detail. That begs the question, why hide? Second of all, we do know that when the Secretary of State was to make the statement on the budget, she was also to make a statement on MLA's pay. But because she didn't want to take the sunshine away from a few headlines for the DUP, she pulled that aspect of the statement to make it yesterday. So it's very clear that at multiple levels, even right down to the timings of statements and the contents of statements, that the DUP have a significant influence over the Secretary of State and the British government.
Now, there's been a suggestion of some sort of shadow assembly. Where do you stand on that? Would that keep full salaries? Would it justify full salaries if you had people up at Stormont pushing on with various types of work but not really been able to make any decisions?
Well, certainly if you read through the Secretary of State's statement, and it is extremely vague, it does seem to indicate that if there was some sort of shadow talking shop, that, you know, there may not be a pay cut. I want to make it very clear on behalf of the SDLP, we're not going to agree to any interim forum just to avoid a pay cut. We want to see the restoration of devolution, and we have actually put a proposal on the table. We have said, look, it's very clear that the DUP and Sinn Féin are incapable of resolving their difficult issues. We know what the obstacles to devolution are. We heard the Secretary of State yesterday say that she and her government remain steadfast in their commitments to the Good Friday Agreement, that they want to remove the obstacles, that they want to restore devolution. Well, it's very clear. Convene the British-Irish Intergovernmental Conference in line with the Good Friday Agreement. agree what needs to happen to address the difficult issues and legislate for it above their heads. Then the DUP and Sinn Féin will have no reason for to stay out on the sidelines. It's very clear that for the past 14 months, the two governments stepped back and they allowed a process of drift. Well, it's now time for them to step up and act like the co-guarantors of the Good Friday Agreement that they're supposed to be.
But in the absence of that, would you go into a shadow assembly?
Well, I think that we need to see detail on it. But what I am very clear on, Frank, is that what concerns we have, and I'm sure many people share them, is that any consultative assembly would actually just act as a satellite of the Tory DUP deal. Because no matter what we would discuss or try to debate or proposals that we would bring forward, how do we know that somewhere in a back room, the Tories and the DUP and the secret coordination committee aren't moving something else or doing whatever? Fundamentally for us, it's about the Good Friday Agreement. That's an internationally binding agreement which was voted on and given the express democratic consent of everyone here. So we need to stay in line with that. Trying to throw the baby out with the bathwater, blaming the Good Friday Agreement for everything that's happening right now is wrong. It's a fallacy. We are where we are now because the DUP and Sinn Féin have failed the Good Friday Agreement. They failed to adhere to it in its letter and they've really failed to adhere to it in its spirit. And that's why we are where we are.
Okay, regardless...
Any forum or talking shop won't address that, Frank.
Okay, regardless of who you blame, you're at this moment in time earning 50 grand a year and you're not able to do, I'm listening to what you're saying, you would like to do the work you've been elected to do, but you're not able to do that work. Do you, and I'll ask this to any politician comes on this morning, considering your salary may be in the near future cut by £14,000 a year, as another paycheck comes in this month for 50 grand a year, do you feel guilty as you see that land in your bank account?
I would say, in all honesty, what I feel is real frustration, Frank, because I'm in a position like my other party colleagues and those in the Alliance and the Ulster Unionists, where we're turning up for work and we want to work, but because there's a dispute between two big bosses, if you like, they're saying, do you know what, because we can't resolve our differences, you're going to have to suffer.
Yeah, but you don't really turn up to work. You could stay in bed all day today and you'd still get the 50 grand.
Well, the thing is, if you were staying in bed, you don't deserve to get a single penny. What I do know is that in North Belfast, we're being hit with welfare changes. We have serious problems around housing, around mental health, around addiction, real challenges in our primary schools and our post-primary schools. And all of those issues need tackled. All of those people need support. So regardless of whether the DUP and Sinn Féin want to continue backbiting with each other and locked in a political deadlock, I will be there doing what I can to help every single person in North Belfast, regardless of their background, because that's my job. That's why I get into politics.
Okay. Nicola Mallon, thanks for your time this morning. Thank you. The SDLP's deputy leader. Good morning. I'll talk to more representatives from other parties to hear what they think with regards to their pay and whether they expect it to be cut. I'm going to be doing that in just a moment. Let me say good morning to Chris Little from the Alliance Party. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Frank.
Chris, I suppose I'll ask the question I asked of Nicola Mallon at the end. I'll ask it of you right at the beginning of the chat. You could be going down by 14 grand as your pay drops in your bank account again this month for just short of 50 grand a year. Do you feel a hint of guilt taking it?
I feel profoundly frustrated, as I think many MLAs do, Frank, that...
That's the word Nicola used. Frustration's a great word.
It's true. It's sincere. And I think it's important to get the point across, as Nicola has endeavoured to do as well, that there are MLAs worth their salt who, despite the limitations on our role, are continue to work round the clock. I've worked in the last few weeks on issues like childcare provision, nursery school provision, school budgets, future skills for work, transport issues. I've worked on with families who have been impacted by public inquiries into extremely sensitive health issues. I think it is important that the public do hear from us that we continue to work as hard as we did previously, but of course we are limited by being able to perform the full functions of our role, and Naomi Long has been absolutely clear since last year that while we can't do 100% of our role, we should not receive 100% of our pay. And for that reason, there was a surprising lack of action and detail from the Secretary of State yesterday on that matter.
But you could stay in your bed. It's a wet day. It's going to be a wet day tomorrow. You could stay in bed all day tomorrow and no one would question you.
I, I'm surprised by that question, Frank, because I think you know some of us MLAs reasonably well. You know what motivates us to get up every morning and to perform our role. It's our passion for our local community. It's our passion to represent the people who give us the privilege of being MLAs. And it's our passion on some of those issues that I've already referenced, and our awareness that the public are under severe pressure in education and health and jobs right across our community in Northern Ireland. That's why we get out of bed to do this job. That's why the Alliance Party has endeavoured to put forward constructive proposals right throughout the talks process, and indeed further to the collapse of the DUP Sinn Féin draft agreement. Naomi Long has written to the Secretary of State to put forward further detailed proposals with regards to how we might progress matters towards some level of Assembly activity, indeed with a view to getting that Executive and Assembly fully back in place doing the job that is needed for the people of Northern Ireland.
So is there any point in the Secretary of State talking to you as a party? She seems to going to be talking and talking and talking. Procrastination is the thief of time. This woman seems to be a procrastinator with a capital P.
Well, I agree. There is an urgency. There has been for some serious time. There was a compromise opportunity on the table there, and it is going to need compromise and leadership from all parties to restore the Executive and Assembly. So the Secretary of State knows where the Alliance Party stands. We have been proactive. We have put proposals in detail in writing. The first thing she could do is appoint an independent mediator to have full all-party talks in order to deal with these issues openly and transparently and in a transparent way to get us back into the Executive and the Assembly.
And a shadow assembly, that's your idea, isn't it?
Well, I think there can be more detail than that, to be honest, Frank. The MLAs could be appointed to the Northern Ireland Policing Board. That has been raised in recent days of the need for accountability for the police. We could explore the possibility of Westminster legislating on what appeared to be a fairly advanced draft set of arrangements around language, petition of concern, legacy. Indeed, the funding should be released for legacy inquests. And in terms of parallel or transitional assembly arrangements, the British-Irish Governmental Conference can be formally consulted, and assembly departmental scrutiny committees could be considered to be put back in place. A lot of work is done in committees. We could be scrutinising budgets. We could be having input into any ministerial decisions that are being taken on policy development on those key issues that are affecting people across Northern Ireland. And that would at least put parties together working constructively on key issues, hopefully in parallel to those all-party talks, to ensure that what, of course, are not ideal and are only transitional arrangements would get us back into our full functions as possible.
But just briefly, would that save your salary?
Well, people have done assessments. If we're not performing 100% of our function, which is in that assembly, asking ministerial questions, bringing forward private legislation, then we shouldn't be in receipt of 100% of our payment. And the Alliance Party is clear on this. But I think this is, whilst that is clearly untellable and needs to be dealt with, there are obviously much more serious and bigger issues here that MLAs ought to be working on 100% to solve in the best interest of the common good of Northern Ireland.
Okay, Chris Little, Thanks for coming on. Thank you. Chris Little from the Alliance Party. I want to check with Doug Beattie, who's from the Ulster Unionist. Doug Beattie, good morning.
Morning, Frank.
I'll start with the same question I've asked other people. 50 grand a year you're getting. Do you feel guilty when it drops into your bank account this month?
Well, I absolutely feel guilty that I'm not doing my job. So if you add the two together, then the answer is of clearly yes. And it's quite depressing as well. I mean, I was elected to do a job. I want to do that job. You know, I work hard. And when I was in the Assembly, I worked hard in the Assembly. But I'm not doing the job that I was elected to do. And therefore, it is not right that I am paid that amount of money. So it is quite clear that MLA pay is untenable as it stands at the moment. The 27% reduction should happen. It should happen absolutely now. And the Secretary of State is dithering and stalling for time, and she needs to get on with it.
So why is she dithering? Is it because the DUP are in her ear? Why is she dithering?
Well, you know, it's unfair to blame everything on the DUP, but there's a reality here. I think she sees a cohort of MLAs. She sees the structures which are still in place that she wants to resurrect, and what she doesn't want to do is put barriers in the way of that. And maybe she views reduction of pay as being a barrier that some MLAs may leave because of that. But that's by the by. I don't think MLAs got in because of the wage. I think they got in because they want to help the community. So I think her reason and her rationale for dithering is unfounded. I think she just needs to get on with it.
Are you in favour of some form of shadow assembly, or is that, as Nicola Mallon said, a talking shop?
Well, of course, it's a bit of a talking shop, but it gives locally elected representatives a voice right this moment in time. What I'm having to do as an elected representative is scrap for information from a non-elected permanent secretary. That's where I find myself at this moment in time, and that is going cap in hand to unelected representatives to ask them what's going on in the country that I'm elected to represent. So at least a shadow assembly would give me the opportunity to stand up and scrutinise and look and see what's going on and know what's going on and see where the budget is being spent, how it's being spent, and scrutinise the spending of that budget. So it can be seen as a talking shop, but it is far better than what we've got now, and it does give us that scrutiny element.
I'm just looking at the calendar here in front of me, and I'm leafing through the pages. We're well into March. How many months do you think of 2018 you'll get a full salary?
Listen, Frank, I don't know, mate, to be honest with you. You know, the reality is, if she's bringing in legislation, that's going to be another month. Then she's going to make another decision, so that's going to be another month. So I would say the earliest that she will make a decision where it'll actually hit me in the pocket or hit my bank account will probably be at least two months from now, maybe 3 months from now. So that's the only thing I could go on, and that's just a pure guess, but that's what I would imagine.
Yeah, Doug, thank you very much. I didn't ask this question to Chris or indeed to Naomi, but I'll ask you anyway, because the next thing we're doing on the programme, this latest survey that's been done by Lucid Talk in relation to people we trust or don't trust. And I have to put my hand up here as well, because in a list of 20, the 19th most untrustworthy of professions is the broadcaster, the journalist. We are not trusted, but we are two places up from the sewer rats, and just between us and the sewer rats are the politicians. Well, why is it that I'm not trusted and you're not trusted?
Well, I guess when life is hard, and life is hard for people out there, that they look to those people who first of all inform them that life is not very hard, is hard, and that would be the broadcasters. So maybe sometimes people just don't like the fact is that broadcasters stand there and they give them the realities of life, and they don't like those realities of life. And clearly the politicians are the one who set policy, and their life is hard because of the politicians. I mean, I find that completely disturbing. I mean, you know, politicians have always been...
Yeah, I should emphasise, of course, it's journalists, includes the print media, very much the tabloid press and all of that. But yeah, go ahead, because you're more interested, understandably, in the politicians.
Well, no, but you know, I'm saying, you know, with politicians, it's nearly, you know, systemic where many people don't trust politicians, and I think that's across the board, and I think Northern Ireland wouldn't be any different from England, Scotland, or Wales, probably on that call. I am concerned in regards to the media, because I think the media lately have been getting a hard time. I think the media have been doing their job in extremely difficult circumstances. I'm talking about Northern Ireland media, print media, on the radio or on the television. I think they've been doing a very difficult job, and I think some of the accusations that's been made against them are absolutely unfounded, and I think that has grown pace. And I don't think I remember a time when media was looked at so lowly. And I don't know if you feel it yourself, Frank, on your show or in general, but I think it's grossly unfair.
Oh, I would have to agree with you on that one. Grossly, with a capital G, unfair. Just stay with me. I think Alan wants to ask a question. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Frank. How are you?
I'm very well, Alan. What's on your mind?
Just listening to these fellas here talking, you know, and they were saying it's going to be another month before this happens and another month after that. Then, if it's going to take that amount of time, why don't they set aside the money that they think they're going to lose aside from today and hand it back when the season does come through?
That's a pretty tough question. It's unfair, maybe, that you're the one that's on the line now, Doug. I haven't asked it to the other politicians, but you guys genuinely feel that you're doing your best to earn the money that you're entitled to. It's unlikely that any of it's going to be handed back to the Exchequer.
Well, you know, if somebody's saying that I have to unilaterally hand money back while a lot of what's going on within this country doesn't actually fall down to me, I think it's grossly unfair, but understandable as well, I have to say, and I think Alan makes a very fair and honest point. But look, if people think I'm not working, then I'm afraid they've got it absolutely wrong. I work 6 days out of seven. I'm normally working till 7 o'clock every evening, so it's not as if I'm not working. What I'm not doing is a job that I'm paid to do, but I am working, and I'm working for my constituents. But for anybody to ask me to unilaterally hand money back while those people who are blocking or stopping an executive from being formed are sitting there with their purse strings pretty tight, then I think that is unfair.
Okay, Doug, thank you very much. Alan, thank you. Right, this is the Frank Mitchell phone-in. Your opinions are welcome. Do you think the salaries will ever be cut of the MLAs? In a survey, it's one of the things that we've touched on in the past where you feel they should be. A vast majority of people feel they should be cut. There's even a suggestion from the highly respected Trevor Rainey that they should be cut over two stages and eventually down to 35,900 roughly from 49,500. So what is it, about 13 grand or something cut off the salaries? But will it ever actually happen? You can let us know what you think. 0289033105.